And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, where I am thrilled to be joined. You know, I've been living in the 90s for the last month and a half because 2020 has been too horrible and The Last Dance was on. I might as well pivot from living in the 90s to living in Belarus. And so I'm so excited to have the co-creators of Game of Zones, which just finished, Adam and Craig Malamud. How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Well, other than being murdered by a swamp dragon in cold blood, I'm doing well. Thank you guys for that.
It was the most noble of deaths, you know, so custom for you.
So I honestly, I have no agenda here, except I want to congratulate you. And I mean this earnestly, because the easiest thing to do in life is to sit on the sidelines and comment on what other people do and never try to create something on your own. And the hardest thing is to create something on your own, knowing it could flop, knowing it could be terrible, knowing it could be a disaster, and even knowing halfway through once it gets popular. Now there's all different other kinds of pressures on you where, like, if it flops, it's even worse. And you guys decided we're going to do it. We're going to keep going. And it was a huge hit, and it brought joy to lots and lots of people. So congratulations and thank you.
Thank you for saying that. And also, you should know that this podcast is a big part, is woven into the fabric of Game of Zones, because I would listen to this on the bus every day going into work. Whenever there's a new episode, I'd be like, oh, new Low Post. And so a lot of the facts and information and takes and stuff like that comes from your podcast. So you're a part of Belarus in multiple ways.
Yeah.
I did send some good natured ribbing at me, which I enjoyed, before my death at the hands of the swamp dragon. I say, can we talk right now about how we're being attacked by Russell? I heard myself in that. I was like, ooh, they kind of got me on that. That's what they have. So, okay. Just for listeners, spoiler, everything from now on assumes that you've seen all of Game of Zones. So if you don't want to know how if you don't want to know how a fictional show based on another fictional show mesh with basketball ends, if you're so invested in the plot of what I just described that you can't bear to know how it ends, stop listening right now. Okay. So it just ended today, hours ago, with Paul Pierce, Bran Stark, being declared the greatest player of all time. Please explain to me how this idea came about.
Well, to be fair, he's the greatest knight of all time. And
that's right.
Yeah. So, that was purely just based on analytics. You know, we just looked at the numbers.
I think it all started when he pooped his pants. I think that's where it all started, because that was the inspiration for making him Bran, and then all the dominoes kind of fell from there. You put him, you know, he's got the wheelchair, and then, you know, that's the Game of Thrones ending. Spoiler on that front, too.
Yeah, there's multiple tiers of spoilers here, because we're – so, but yeah,
I didn't put it together that I forgot that the wheelchair is the inspiration for all of this.
The wheelchair game. Yeah, that is what he's one of many brands. When you're dealing with an NBA universe with tons and tons of players and a Game of Thrones world where there's, like, you know, a handful of main characters, we've had a lot of people we've mashed up into different roles. So there's been a bunch of brands. There's, like, Chris Paul and Kyrie are both different shades of Tyrion. There's been multiple Jaime Lannisters. I think Dwayne Wade was originally – oh, no, he was Cersei. Originally.
LeBron was definitely, yeah, Jaime.
Yeah. So,
but Bran is our, like, go-to character from Game of Thrones, because anytime a player gets injured, they generally become a Bran. And it's just Paul Pierce was a different way of getting into that that we were excited about. And we basically, like, built – we were so excited about building up this GOAT conversation, because obviously it's, like, the number one conversation in sports, in every sport. And then just subverting it by, we're like, what if we just chose some random person? And then it all kind of clicked in our heads.
Well, Paul Pierce is not quite random, but I think, and by the way, he did, you guys, I almost am suspicious that it's coordinated that 24 hours before this episode, Paul Pierce released his 5 greatest players of all time list, and it did not include LeBron. So Paul Pierce was already in the GOAT ecosystem. So when that happened yesterday, so today's Thursday, Paul Pierce's list, I believe, came out yesterday, Wednesday. Did you guys, like, start laughing to yourselves, like, about what a coincidence it was about to be?
Yes.
The amount of restraint it took to not tweet out, like, yeah, emojis and spoil the whole episode.
To be fair, I did. I did tweet something out. I couldn't stop myself. But it was an incredible gift. First of all, Paul Pierce, I'm a Sixers fan, and Paul Pierce is now on my list of favorite players of all time. He changed his profile pic to the picture of him as the GOAT King, and he shouted it out like three times, and he took it like a champ. And I gotta say, Paul Pierce was a great player, and he's quite entertaining to watch. Whether or not, you know, part of, that was the whole speech by Kyrie. You know, part of it was like about this, how part of the fun is that you got to have people churning, you know, like saying ridiculous takes and having their takes. And like, how much fun would it be if everyone's take was, you know, really precise? You know, you got to like, right. This is what makes the debate interesting, is that you have guys like Paul Pierce who genuinely feel that LeBron is not in his top five. And the reasons for that may be some more than just, his play. And that's really fun. So I got to give Paul Pierce a lot of credit. But I will say the reason that we chose to make him the GOAT was more of a commentary on Game of Thrones and their choice and the way they picked their stuff than
the their
than
stuff. I like the way they picked their stuff. I was going to ask how much again, spoiler for everybody, stop listening now if you haven't seen Game of Thrones and you would like to see Game of Thrones. How much was the ending of that show and the reaction to the ending, which I would describe as mild disappointment to completely freaking out in anger? How much did that inform how you wanted to end? Did you know right away when you saw that ending, like, oh, we can almost make a strange and off-putting ending, even if it lands with a thud? Well, so did the other show.
Yeah, it was a godsend. I mean, it was like a win-win. You couldn't lose because if it's bad, then the parody is complete. Like, that's what we always say. And it was also the most amazing part was that the battle that they did was too dark. That was the big joke about the Battle of Winterfell. And as you might have been able to figure out, like, animating a whole battle is about as difficult as it gets in the animation world. And so we had this cop out. We could just make the whole thing pitch black and then make it seem like the most amazing battle ever and not have to animate it. We literally made that last week. That whole thing came together, that wow. Battle scene. It was originally not even going to have it. We were just going to go straight to LeBron being like to Jordan Farmer, bet you love that. You know, did you see me become the GOAT? And we're like, we got to put the battle in here. And we were able to cobble it together.
The original idea there was that because the media deal was destroyed, no one got to see the great battle. But that didn't really, like, as the thing came along, like, as we produced it, it just didn't have that effect. It didn't quite have that effect. And Craig and I were talking, we're like, what if we do what we talked about, which is just put a crazy audio battle in there and just make it super dark and chaotic. And that way we can kind of have that win-win of showing the battle, but not having to show the battle. And we made that decision.
We were able to just like throw in every joke we could think of about, you know, we had like a guy drowning in Ewing's sweat.
That one got me.
And we're just like, you know, we don't have to animate that, the water splashing, you know.
It also gave us a chance to put in some Last Dance references,
right.
And so like the Tony Kukoc line
and a gratuitous Gobert COVID-19 joke, which I feel like you had to do. You had to do it. And you please do, Craig, I assume it's you, Craig, please do the I touch his face line in the Gobert voice, please.
Oh, wait, what was it? I touch his face. The thing is that I touched the face. It was pitch shifted down to the problem. So I do like LeBron, for example, but there's no point in redoing that because it's like, good people of Cleveland, this is for you. But the truth is that all those voices are pitch shifted. And so I can't do most of those characters for people.
Can you approximate? So I would say there's one voice that there's one like meta voice that is the baseline of Draymond Green, Jimmy Butler, DeMarcus Cousins, also Vlade Divac is that you, Adam? Can I hear that voice?
Incredibly
now?
Perceptive.
Say something angry and threatening to me in that voice.
So first of all, we don't need Luka. Foxes are smart. We drafted De'Aaron Fox because foxes are smart.
And then so that's Vlade. And then Jimmy Butler's like, you know, like, I don't know there. I sort of like a more cockney. Like, come here. Come here, Wiggins. Come here. You got no heart. You know, and
there's a lot of characters that are like Carl Tanner. I don't know if you remember Carl Tanner from Game of Thrones, but he's like the guy from Gin Alley that's got two knives.
Yeah.
I was an effing legend in Gin Alley.
Yeah, we made Rondo that character in one of the real early episodes.
I'd like to go back and refresh my memory from some of the real early episodes. So you mentioned Kyrie. As you can imagine, as someone who gently pokes fun, I gently poked fun at Kyrie today on national television because Rachel on The Jump asked me, is it something or nothing that Kyrie Irving has tweeted or Instagram that he's going to start working out again? And I said, first of all, I'm not speculating on anything related to Kyrie Irving because God only knows. And then I said something like, what really is something? And what really isn't that? Like, what is anything really? And so that's what you tap into. But he gives this speech in the penultimate episode to his band of angry, disgruntled players. And in it, he has a little moment where he says, you know, I have a dream of, and you cut to Jimmy Butler, like giving a little side eye, like, did he really say that I have a dream? That is like, I think one of the things that you guys have straddled the line of is there's a certain NBA fan that's not going to understand that a joke was made there at all. And then there's a certain level of NBA fan that is going to be like, oh my God, this show speaks so directly to my life. And you have leaned into that second kind of fan without alienating the first kind of fan, which is a very hard thing to do. So I'm wondering, did you ever feel like the balance was ever going too far one way, or did you always feel like you had it kind of under control?
Well, we always try to pack in enough stuff that you're going to hit checkpoints for different types of viewers. In terms of like if the person misses that joke, like we try to make sure that every line is either moving the plot forward or making a joke or has a reference. And so chances are that like most people will miss half the jokes. You know, and what we realized early is that we make this cartoon for like an active viewership. So it's as opposed to like a TV show where people sitting back and watching, like this is, people are watching this on platforms that have comments and things like that. So we just make the jokes and breeze through them and don't hold people's hands. And we figure that people will explain everything in the comments. And that's become part of the culture of watching Game of Zones, is whether it's on Reddit or YouTube or Twitter, is everyone kind of then says, oh, did you see this? And did you see this? And everyone explains it to each other. And it becomes like an interactive experience to find these Easter eggs, whether they're in the dialogue or the background or whatever.
My favorite kind of jokes are the ones that they're not throwaway jokes, but they exist like on the side and come and go really fast. So I will give you an example from the second to last episode, and I want you to think of other jokes you think of like that. So when the Sun Kings are lining up to stand up for the realm, the combination of the Phoenix Suns and the Sacramento Kings, headed by Vlade Divac and Devin Booker. And I believe Booker is giving the speech about how we will no longer combine forces. We will no longer be the teams that toil in eternal mediocrity. And then someone just from out in the side, really quick, maybe worse, just like, so how do you just like that? What is the process of deciding at that moment to interject that? Because those are the bits that take it from good to great, for me anyway.
You know, I completely agree. Like, I love when the background guys just chime something in. We also have these scenes that we call the town hall scenes, which was like episode, I want to say 702, but it's season 7, episode 2, where you have the giant crowd of players all listening. And those can sometimes be the funniest scenes because you just get that rant. We can do silly accents and have random people calling out stuff that's so reminiscent of just like a group of people sitting around.
I will say this, Craig, yeah, which is that like one thing that like influenced our humor, the most random movie from our childhood is Robin Hood Men in Tights.
And I've seen you guys make reference to that. I've never seen Robin Hood Men in Tights. Do I need to? It's like a big hole in my early 90s or mid 90s?
Yeah. I think it was mid 90s. Yeah.
Yeah. We had a VCR that we had recorded like off of like HBO playing it. And I like burned it down to like nothing. It was like completely worn out. I watched it over and over.
We
I
memorized that the whole movie so much. And so I will say this: is it one of the most important films ever made? No, but for in our experience in the Malamud household, it is arguably a top five most important movie ever. Certainly, it has certainly like helped shape our humor for this show. And so a lot of the call and response stuff, we love like when the random guys of like, on that show just yell out, you know, with their cockneyed accent, like, I don't know. Yeah, sure. And it's like, there's something about that.
Yeah. Funny. I think one of our earlier scenes that did that was the Pacers scene with Paul George trying to rally his guys to like be a seventh seed team or like a sixth seed team. And there's like people in the back who are just like, he's like, we can be a fifth seed team. And someone's like, maybe seventh, because what we had done was we had written that whole scene expecting them to get into the fifth or sixth seed. And then that season they ended up getting the seventh seed. So we had to update everything last minute with some guy in the crowd just like shouting out what actually happened. That was the genesis of those jokes.
And that also had a lot of good people yelling like, who's Rick Smith?
Rick Smith. I just recently interviewed Rick Smith. He was very sad about game 7 of the 1998 conference final still against the Bulls. By the way, speaking of, I forgot about Paul Pierce. I'm more interested. Have you heard any feedback from Brian Scalabrine about Paul, being Paul Pierce's wheelchair mover?
No.
Was anyone else in contention for that role, or did you immediately land on Scalabrine?
I think there might have been a conversation, but I think it was immediately like, okay, of all the things we have to get done, we're just going to go with Scalabrine for this.
Yeah.
The side jokes are the ones that always get me. So like when you're doing the famous Toronto episode where DeMar DeRozan is traded and all the hijinks around that, just Norman Powell, just creating the idea that Norman Powell really wants to be Kyle Lowry's best friend and a key part of the Raptors franchise, and just hammering that over and over and over again. Again, that takes a good episode. It makes it great. So how do you land on that?
Well, I can say that for our process, part of it is that we write a script and it's bad. Or we have ideas and they're bad, and then we find one that's okay, and then we write a script and it's bad. Then we write, like, we just obsess on this thing, like, you wouldn't expect people to obsess on a little cartoon for. And I think one of the reasons you get all those kind of jokes like that is that we're writing throughout the process. So we write a script, we do a ton of drafts for it, then we go into record and we riff, and Craig will say, like, that is good, let's go with that. Or like, ooh, this gives me an idea, and we'll rewrite there, and then Craig will put the whole audio together. He'll edit all the audio. And that is like a major part of the process, because you have to pick the right takes. That matters. And you have to find the exact right timing, make sure that this joke is delayed and all these things. And then Craig will say, like, I have an idea for something. We should have a guy yelling. Sometimes Craig will surprise me when we go into the recording, and he'll just like be in there late night and he'll record some funny lines himself and throw them into the background.
Well, what'll happen a lot of times is that I'm Adam's younger brother. I'm like 6 years younger than him. And my whole life, I've kind of just been like Adam's audience, like biggest fan. When I was like fifth grade, he was like a senior in high school, and he was like cool, and he got a car and stuff. So I'm so attuned to he'll kind of just riff in the writing room, and then I'll either like be scrambling to like write down little side comments he'll say, or I'll like record the brainstorms to catch those things that normally don't get caught in our notes. And then I'll make sure that when we go into the recording process later, that we get those with the exact same intonation that it was originally delivered, so it feels improvised, even though the whole thing is so planned out. That's always been like something that I think is like incredibly valuable and also so hard to retain, is that like feeling of like that you have when you first come up with the idea in a brainstorm.
Speaking of that episode, has Jakob Poeltl ever approached you for the damage you have done to his life forever by coining Jake Puddle and having all the people just refer to him as Jake Puddle in that entire, and now he's just Jake Puddle to millions of people, is Jake Puddle forever, thanks to you guys.
It's one of my proudest achievements.
Have you ever met him before?
I think he tweeted about it with some laughing emojis.
Oh, he like did that. It. Okay. Yeah, all right. He's a very nice person.
Yeah, yeah. To be honest, like, I've been amazed about how nice almost everyone is. And that's one of the reasons why we're like, we've got to do something else now, because we now know like a lot of people in the NBA and everyone's nice. And like, and so like, you know, we have this ability to parody and satirize people. And like, and then we find out that everyone we make fun of is like actually a nice guy. They're good sports. And so, and Jake Puddles, you know, he's just one of those good guys.
I'll tell you though, a couple of jokes just from the last episode that I bet the subjects of the jokes would have at least, even if they would have to pretend to put on a good front. But during the battle, one of the current day players, the current day Knights, which one's Drexler? And then someone just shouts out, oh, he's just like a worse Jordan. Like that one, Clyde is not going to take well to that one. That's a great joke. And then whoever is ordering Chris Paul to punch Scottie Pippen in the testicles. That's a good one. Just punch him. Yeah, get him, Chris. Punch him right in the dong.
Yeah, you know, I can't say that every one of these jokes is a true, you know, work of art, but when it makes us laugh, we got to put it in.
I think that those players might – those are sensitive spots, no pun intended, for those players. Has any person within the NBA, other than media people like me who are basically just dying for attention, has anyone or their agents come to you and said, hey, you know, just FYI, like my guy would really, really like to be in Game of Zone somehow?
Not really that, but we have had some agents who've told us that like their client really liked the episode, but can't say that publicly because the episode insults friends and teammates of theirs.
Pretty good.
That's
yeah. Yeah. I can't really think of anyone offhand who has asked us to be in Game of Zones, but I know that there's been people who've like been really excited. Like Spencer Dinwiddie was like, he's been a fan and he was really excited about his when he was in episode 2 of this season, and he changed his profile pic to that. So I can't think of anyone who's asked to be in it. There was one awkward moment when Serge Ibaka came to the office and we happened to be animating the Toronto episode that you spoke about before. And he's looking around at all the monitors of the animators for his head. And he was one of the characters that we had designated to be in a helmet. so we only had a certain budget for heads. And so that was awkward. I was like, so there you are there. And it was like this guy in a helmet.
Well, at least you didn't make him an animal like you did with Korver. Have you made any – Kyle Korver became a bird. Lonzo Ball became a fetus.
Yeah, he's a fetus dragon.
Dragon, that's right, because LeVar was the father of dragons. I'm trying to think, are there other, there must be other players slash animals slash demons characters that you've made.
Well, we made a horse just into a basketball player, but that's sort of the reverse direction.
That was the horse that was traded for,
Has
Mario Hezonja ever contacted you about that? Because he was the Raptors took him over a horse.
Yeah. Another good sport. He
posted it on Facebook. Some crying emojis. I think his friends were like busting his balls about it.
Yeah. Okay. So he was cool with that. I mean, we made Maester Windhorse, Centaur. And
Windy?
We saw him in the jump and he was a good sport about it.
Yeah, he did a pretty good impression of his British accent.
Crame City.
I will say, I'm just going to say it because I don't care. When that episode came out, Howard Beck mentioned this text chain to you guys on a prior podcast. I was on it. Windhorse was on it. And at the time, Windhorse claimed he had not watched the episode yet. And all of us were like, dude, you need to drop everything right now. And he's like, I'm in the episode. I'm like, you're the star of the whole episode. You have the best character in the whole episode. I thought it was with the reveal that he was a centaur was just an all time Game of Thrones moment. I hope he liked it. I missed this episode of The Jump. He liked it.
Well, it was a new, he seemed to be okay with it. He didn't he didn't review it either positively or negatively, but he did his voice. He said, we've got to get to Crame City.
It's just like, we've for so long wanted to make him a centaur because his name has the word horse in it. And so when we saw the opportunity, we're like, yes, this is our moment. And we're so excited to make this sort of like this buddy cop mind hunter kind of episode of Game of Zones where he and Dwayne Wade go and discover a mystery when like everyone else is doubting it. That got us so excited for making that episode.
Yeah, we had a much longer plot there, which was initially like the whole thing was going to be like a buddy cop thing with those two investigating the horse being out indefinitely, and it was going to be a lot longer. And then we decided
I would watch the cutting room floor of that. Someone on the text chain joked that Windhorse was now eligible for a Screen Actors Guild card because of his performance in this episode. Was there an NBA character across any front that you really wanted to get in? Or you felt like would have fit in well, but you just, for whatever reason, you couldn't get him in or her in, and you will feel regret for that person not being in the Game of Zones universe.
Allen Iverson?
He's a cameo.
He has a cameo.
He has a cameo at some, in the last episode, right?
Yeah.
He was the original Carl Tanner. He was like, practice. We talking about practice, and he's like sitting around drinking from like a skull of someone he crossed over, like Tyronn Lue or something.
Yeah, yeah.
but never got in. Yeah.
So definitely him. There's a lot of people who like for example, Tracy McGrady's not in it. And he should be in there. And he was one of the maesters. We had a whole list of maesters, but eventually
around Kevin Garnett.
He's not in it ever.
He's in it for like 2 seconds in the Feast of the East episode when LeBron, we keep flashing back. That's how far back we could go. Yeah. And he would have been just an amazing character to have on the show.
Do we get any Klay Thompson moments that I'm forgetting it through the running?
He's
tailor made.
So he's in the Golden Summer episode when he's staring at scaffolding that Ron Adams is painting the fresco on, and part of that conversation.
He also comes in after KD is sitting on the throne and says it's his turn to sit on the throne, because we were trying to think of the logic there, like, who gets to sit on the O'Brien throne when you win? There's a whole team of kings by that logic. So we're like, okay, I guess they have a rotation system and they each get like 15 minutes.
It's funny, you actually, this reminds me of a question. So I was very curious as we got to the final episode for a show that purports to be about, I guess, a medieval basketball league of some kind. I was wondering, are they actually going to play a basketball game? Is the Dream Team going to play basketball against the current iteration of the Dream Team, I guess? Was there ever thought of like, maybe we should just have like a brief snippet of basketball, or was it never going to be actual basketball?
So it's when we first started doing the show, it was just Craig and I doing the animation, and there was just no way that we could come close to showing basketball.
I'm just talking about in the climactic episode.
Mm-hmm. Oh, in the climax. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We eased our way into it, throughout the seasons. And then in this episode, I don't think so, because the genesis of this, because it was always going to be, if we were going to do it, it was going to be dark like that. So, and also one of the fun things about Game of Zones is that we always keep it kind of ambiguous as to what basketball actually is.
That's the best. That's a bit like, it's, there's no evidence that it's actually basketball ever. I mean, they talk about it, but do they know how to play? D'Antoni's like, we could stretch the floor, but it's unclear if there's even a court anywhere.
Exactly. No, we wrote a show Bible early on when we made like season 4 and turned the show into like a real show. So we're like, we need to figure out what this is. And we're trying to describe what basketball would be. And we decided it was just, there are different rules depending on what city you're in, and it's somewhere between actual warfare with weapons and basketball. So, you know, there's no flagrant fouls. You can just like chop someone with an axe or block them with a warhammer, and you have a shield. So it's sort of like 90s basketball on like ultimate steroids. And then you're also trying to get it in a hoop, but then there'd be like another city where the hoops are really far apart, like 1,000 yards, and you have to like launch catapults with basketballs into the hoops. And like, you know, we just had like, it's like early, you know, in the medieval times, if you extrapolate back, like the rules were so simple and poorly thought out that like they were still figuring things out.
It was half war, half basketball.
Yeah. I'm looking at my list of jokes just from the last episode that I liked, and there are some more that we can talk about. But we have to talk about, I don't know if it's because you guys are Philly fans or because he's just such a great NBA character. But again, spoiler alert for everybody who hasn't watched this show based on another show, based on a set of books, based also on basketball. The reappearance of Sam Hinkie in the final episode feels perfect to me, because he's an unusual character, period, who kind of fits well in your universe of unusual characters. But I also, he's like a perfect litmus test for how serious a basketball fan are you? Because if you've heard of Sam Hinkie, you can tell me about him. I'm like, all right, this guy speaks my language. If you haven't heard of Sam Hinkie, but you know basketball, you're a fan, but you're not a fan. Like, he's the perfect, everything he's come to represent, everything about it. So when did you know Hinkie is going to appear ravaged and tortured with long stringy hair? When did you know he was going to make a reappearance?
We were trying to figure out how we needed Kyrie to turn really fast from wanting to destroy the media into wanting to fix everything. So we didn't have that much time. And then it just, I don't know. It was just like, he's someone who burnt something down and never had a chance to rebuild it.
I think it just clicked. I think that in one draft, it just popped in. And it was just like, Kyrie was talking about burning things down. It was like, There it is. And keep in mind, to like us as Sixers fans, like Sam Hinkie is like a borderline deity. You know, he's like a godlike figure, a mythical basketball figure. And so, you know, it's hard for us sometimes to remember that like a lot of people don't know who he is. So it's like, obviously, you know, Sam Hinkie, he's one of the many gods of basketball. And so, we had to, especially given the fact that like this last season was uncomfortably Celtic centric for Sixers fans. And so we had to do something, some sort of homage to our hometown heroes.
How much did it hurt you to write the joke of Hinkie in a dungeon for an undetermined period of time, asking Kyrie how the Sixers are doing with Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, and I assume Jason Tatum?
Honestly, it was kind of satisfying, I think. It was just to express, it's a cathartic to get that out.
I agree. It needed to be said. And listen, I was someone who was like, you know, so excited about that draft, and I was so hyped on Fultz, and but it turns out that, Jason Tatum's pretty good and he's on the Celtics and that sucks. And, we had to get it out in some way. You know, that's been too bottled up.
Have you ever heard from Maester Hinkie ever?
Yes, actually. So
I don't know if we heard from him or more that he heard from us.
Yeah. So we, at the Sloan Analytics Conference a few years ago, we did the opening video. Daryl Morey asked us to do the opening video, and we did a Game of Zones opening for that. I think it was 2018. And we met Kirk Goldsberry there, and he took us afterwards to like this bar where all these analytics people were hanging out. And it was a whole like analytics party at the Sloan Conference. And Sam Hinkie was there, and I couldn't keep it together. And I was drunk, and I went up to him, and it was one of the most embarrassing moments of my life. I basically just told him, like, we'll never hurt you. We'll never make fun of you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And Craig basically apologized.
I was drunk and just like couldn't stop babbling. And so I basically was just like, I'm sorry. I apologize. And he just kind of like pulled Adam away, because Sam was basically like cornered for like 15 minutes of Adam just explaining to him how much he loves the process.
My last memory of Sam Hinkie there was just him like looking around trying to get out of a conversation.
He was actually like super nice. And also
he was so nice, and he hadn't seen it yet, but he told us how his phone was blowing up like crazy while I was teaching a class at Stanford about it. So it was a special moment.
I bet you would have reacted more like that, as you describe yourself, around Hinkie than if you saw Embiid in the same bar. I bet Embiid would not inspire that same sort of, I don't know what, mix of reverence and awe, and I don't think he would be the same.
I think what we love about Hinkie is that like he just was rebellious in such a smart, interesting way, and like we're both suckers for like analytics and for science and all, and observing things in new and interesting ways and trying to outsmart, I don't know, the opponent. And
it's like a closed system, that, you know, basketball. And so when someone comes along and does something experimental and interesting, it's like very exciting, especially when you're coming from the environment. We were a Sixers fans where it was like, it was floating in that eighth seed purgatory for a long time. And what he did was so exciting, and he got so, and especially it was so divisive in Philly, where half the people, like the smart fans, are like really into it, and other guys are like, yo, Hinkie's an idiot, man, you don't lose, that's ridiculous, you all get, you know, the hoagie coming out of their mouth and stuff like that. And so he was someone who was just, I just appreciated that we had a team that was really interesting, and we were like being an outlier. And so that's, I think, why we're such fans of his, is because it was interesting what he's doing. It was cool.
Yeah, the process Sixers are an all-time just interesting thing to read about and write about and talk to people about. One of my friends, Jerome Weitzman, wrote a book, Tanking to the Top, that I haven't read yet, but it's on my list of things to do. And I honestly think, I was actually thinking more about it today as I was walking around outside, because I had been inspired by this image of poor Sam Hinkie being tortured in a dungeon for years and years. I always felt that story was covered like 10% wrong in a number of ways. Number one, people built what Sam did up to be a very like intellectually rigorous thing, which on one level it was, but on another level it was the simplest way to build a championship basketball team that you could ever imagine, as you guys talk about in the show. And also, I think Sam would go to the – I think Sam they changed the lottery rules because of the Sixers. Whether they want to say that or not, they changed it because of the Sixers, because he essentially said, you guys set these rules. I'm actually going to use them. No one else has the guts to actually use them the way they should be used. It's not my fault. You guys made rules that suck. I'm going to use them the way that they should be used. There's something sort of poetic about that, because it's like, it's not my fault. I didn't make the rules. You guys made them. Here's how you should use them.
He's like hyper Daryl Morey. He feels like the offspring of Daryl Morey, who comes from a system. It's like, I'm like Daryl Morey, but crazier, and I'm going to go all the way. And, but
this is for either of you, or both of you. What's a joke that you weren't sure about that almost got cut, that there were some arguments over and made the show, and you're like, man, I'm so glad that joke made the show, because it really worked?
So, Craig, I'll just take this, which is Craig really wanted to cut Pondcast.
I knew you were going to bring that up.
And I was like, Craig, I'm telling you, this is good. This is good stuff.
I was like, it's like the weakest pun I've ever heard. You put an N in the word podcasts.
But like, our whole thing is like taking stupid, like our whole brand is taking a really dumb idea and doing it really, really seriously and really, really well. And we've been doing that for a long time. I mean, if you think about what Game of Zones is, the thing is a mashup viral video, especially a one-off nothing video. And it's like so deep now at this point. And podcast was that, like, I was like, let's take this stupid pun and let's just show a whole pond and get all the podcast people in there. And Craig was like, Adam, this might be too stupid. And I'm like, this is our last season, Craig. There's no better time.
Well, I'll tell you, as one of the people who was in the pond, so taking the germ of an idea and blowing it up, first of all, you put everybody in a pond. That's step one to doing that. And the joke that made it for me was when Dwayne Wade just says, well, this looks like a nice place for an intimate long form conversation. to just state so literally what a podcast is.
Yes. I was editing the audio together, and I was like, this scene is so unnecessarily wedged in here. And there's no point in it existing except to just make the, like, explain what podcasts would be in our universe. And I was like, fine, we'll just do it.
You got a world build.
What about you, Craig? Was there a joke that you were wary about either way that got in? You're like, all right, that worked. I'm glad we put that in.
Oh, man. Honestly, the Paul Pierce ending. There was a point at which Adam was like, I don't want to do this. I think we were going to, like, not call him the GOAT at the end. It was having him write the book at the end, I think, right, was the thing we were debating. And, it was a big risk because, like, you know, anyone that doesn't watch Game of Thrones is going to have no idea what the hell we were doing. But it ultimately, I think what saved it was that we got this double whammy of – it's also kind of a shot at D&D, the guys who wrote Game of Thrones, to basically say, like, they're the Paul Pierce. I don't know if that's an insult, though. It's like, I don't know what that is.
I felt like we had gone in – pretty hard on Paul Pierce in this final season. And like, we did the sharding stuff, and like Paul Pierce is an incredible basketball player, and, you know, and he has like a really crazy story. The guy was like stabbed and came back, and like, you know, he's a million times better at basketball than I am. And I felt like we had, you know, he's like one of the greats, and we did the sharding stuff with him. We reduced him just a guy who sharts and sits there and calls himself the truth. And then to also have him like represent someone who is the GOAT, but obviously not the GOAT, I felt like might have been going too far. But now that he was cool with it, and he, you know, was like, you know, put it as his profile picture and seems to maybe think that we were being serious. But like, either way, I feel good about it.
So on that, I was reading one of the interviews you guys have done. One of you said something about, you know, if we start writing something and it feels too obvious, we've got to do something else. If a joke feels too obvious, we've got to veer the other way. I can relate to that because I always say maybe the only good thing or the best thing about Twitter for me has been if it's a tweet, it's not a column. Like if you can write it in a tweet, it's not worth a column. Just write it in a tweet. But sometimes you have to make the obvious joke because it's just too good and it's too perfect. So for example, on the night before the ultimate battle, when all of the knights, the greatest knights are sitting around drinking and Damian Lillard is singing, much as like happened in Game of Thrones, James Harden takes leave of the events. And you know, as he does it, what the joke is going to be. And the joke is going to be that he's going to go out to a medieval version of a strip club, whatever that is. And so you know the joke. And yet as an audience member, I want you to make the joke anyway, even though I know it's coming. Now you follow that up by going completely other way. And who's the one person that goes to join James Harden? It's Kawhi Leonard, who for some reason talks with a ridiculous voice in your universe and uses crazy words and wants to go to the brothel with James Harden. So this is my way. Is that one sequence of events a sort of distillation of how you deal with the sometimes you have to make the obvious joke, but you can't always make the obvious joke. You have to sort of veer in absurd random directions. And how hard was balancing that?
I don't know if we, in that particular instance, we thought that clearly about it. Like, I think we were, and I don't know if we even knew if that one was obvious or not, but we just loved the timing of him being like, all right, we're just waiting for his moment, you know? And the reason that we had Kawhi follow him is because he had that video of him at the strip club earlier this year.
That's right.
And so that we try to like not make anything that's not founded on like we wouldn't want to just say he goes there. So like we try to make sure that everything is based on some reference sometimes, not always, but mostly. And so that's why he followed him. But like that was not as obvious of a joke. So I don't know that we thought that hard about it. We were just sort of like, that's funny. Let's do that.
I will say another example of that same principle of just going for the really obvious joke that I thought I like always makes me laugh is the Joakim Noah free throw joke we made when they're trying to break Charles Oakley out of prison when James Dolan throws him in the dungeon, and Melo goes to the window to get the key thrown to him, and he's looking for Derrick Rose, and it's Joakim Noah there, and he's like, do you have the key? And like Joakim Noah has to like do a free throw to like get it through the window, and we like give it like 10 seconds of build up, and like everyone knows exactly what's going to happen. And then it just happens. It's like happens and the scene ends. And,
there's like a subtle art to like knowing when to like lean into the obviousness and play it up and when to make it totally surprising. And I think that's just intuition.
Do either of you have, I mean, I know this is how many, eight seasons of this or seven, no, seven seasons.
Seven. Yeah.
So lots and lots of material, but do either of you have a favorite moment? Or it doesn't have to be your favorite, but a moment or a joke or a look or a scene that is very special to you for whatever reason.
Well, I will say the moment I think that makes me laugh the hardest, like when I was editing alone in like the edit bay, I couldn't stop laughing, is when Lucky, the mascot, volunteers to put his soul in the soul box. I don't know what it is about that, but he just like this cute little weird looking old man creature leprechaun, just like, no one will volunteer. Brad Stevens saying, who's going to put their soul in the soul box so that we can have team chemistry? And he's like, I'll do it.
Give me that box. I'll do it.
He's got like some Mickey Mouse.
It's so heroic. And yet he sounds like Mickey Mouse. And like, and Brad Stevens just has to be like, thanks, Lucky, but no, it's not for you.
Just dismisses him. It's so like a condescending. That is a subtle good one. Yeah.
Yeah. We really went all in on that. Unlucky's death. And I don't know how many people cared about that joke, but for us.
Yeah, that was one of those things that like we thought was so funny to just like do 2 minutes of like old Brad Stevens just like viscerally describing what happened to Lucky and that he's like sworn on a blood oath to continually entertain during timeouts. And like then it just slowly he describes like his slow and arduous death. And I felt like that we thought was funny, but it turns out that like it wasn't as funny as we thought it would be to people. So that was one of our for us jokes that just happened to go on for too long. One joke that for me, I always like the Harden drawing fouls joke. He's like really seriously painting the duck, and it's like a really bad painting of a duck, and he's like,
That's a good pun.
Favorite place to draw fouls. Yeah, that's one of my favorite ones. Also with James Harden is the your defense is weak AF, and he thinks that it was a Donald Foyle who sold him his defense was weak. So that's a good one.
That's one of those like really exciting moments, because we were like, is there anyone on the Warriors with the initials AF? And we just like searched through like Basketball Reference for all of the players that ever played on the Warriors. We're like, it's Donald Foyle!
I got it. That was good. And then also, I like Blake Griffin's stand-up routine that he keeps, is like a repeating joke, because that's based on his actual stand-up routine he does. And the part where he's doing it during while they're trying tensely negotiating the trade between the Clippers and the Pistons, and like Stan Van Gundy's like trying, can't help but laugh at the joke about refs being blind. That moment to me is so weird, that like funny to me.
Well, the weird throwaway ones are not throwaway. The weird sort of side ones are the ones that always just kill me. So the one that stands out for me, and I was just talking to someone about this today randomly because he brought it up on the phone, is the Triple Dirks episode where Porzingis, Luka, and Maxi Kleber are sitting over Dirk, who's old and bedridden and is being informed that Kristaps Porzingis has come to play for House Mavericks. And Dirk asks, why have you, at such a young age, why have you switched houses already? And Porzingis is frightened by this god of their world asking him this interrogation question. And he starts an answer, I was on House Knicks, and Dirk just, House Knicks, say no more. As I understand, that just like absolutely killed me at the time. The timing of that has to be exactly right. It has to, like, timing is, and like, I don't know if it took multiple takes or you had five different versions of how that conversation would go, but that was the right one.
The go-to joke for us that like is our staple is just calling a bad team bad. Like that is just like when you just make the classic joke about like this, a bad house.
That's why I think my favorite episode is the lottery episode, because I just love like just take the bottom 14 teams and just have it out with them. It's just so funny. It's just,
like the good teams are less funny. The bad teams are the funnier ones.
Yeah, everyone's like, gotta show like my successful team. Like Raptors fans were like, they are always getting angry at us because we never showed the finals after the last year. And we had done the whole DeMar DeRozan trade.
Yes.
And for us, we're like, you got a huge episode. Like we can't do two whole episodes about them. But also the way the schedule works, like, the finals happen after we finish the season, so we really can never do it about the finals unless we somehow get mysteriously lucky.
God bless Toronto fans. Only one fan base could be angry after winning the actual NBA championship and not having a fictional show based on another fictional show based on a series of fictional books, not about basketball, fail to adequately honor their real-life NBA team for winning the real NBA. Only Toronto fans. It's only one fan base.
But the thing is, it wouldn't be like, it's not as funny to show a team winning and kicking butt. You know, it's like, that's not where the humor is. The humor is in the people that are struggling or screwing up or whatever.
Yeah, the team's making mistakes and being boneheads. That's the best stuff.
So I wanted to watch the lottery episode again before I had you guys on. I just ran out of time. We had a crazy family day because I just remember it is such an opportunity for you guys to just rapid fire. You know, who's the representative on the dais for each of these teams? Like LeBron is on there for the Lakers. That's funny in and of itself. But I wanted to rewatch it. And I believe you guys released B-roll of every team, a version of every team winning the lottery and their reaction to that. So refresh my memory. What are some of your pet jokes from that? Cause that I remember at the time that being just like a home run joke machine episode.
So I will say that some of the jokes were way worse than others. Like if we had like if like
Grizzlies, we had nothing.
Yeah, there's like, yay.
So yeah, six of the 14 were just, all right, yeah. It's going to end that way. We got super lucky it was the Pelicans because we could do like the Curb Your Enthusiasm joke. And it was so perfect with our tampering episode. Like we got so lucky. Like people don't realize how much luck has played into the episodes and the jokes that were successful in the episodes. Like the whole Raptors episode was written before they won the championship. And yeah, I mean, we kind of make our own luck, but like at the same time, like I don't think anyone was like confident the Raptors were going to win. And so when that happened, it just made that episode seem like, oh, they predicted it. We also though hedge our bets because we have like so many different teams where we could say, oh, we predicted it. You know, oh, the Lakers won. They predicted it because they had the tampering scene. You know, it's
that one was tricky though. The lottery was really tricky though because it came out like the day after, once we had to scramble to get that thing. It came out the day after the lottery.
Yeah.
And so we had to scramble for that. And believe me, the last words any animation supervising producer wants to hear is, so we need 14 alternate endings.
Yeah. You can see as you keep watching them, they stop getting animated. Because so the first three, we fully animated and we're ready to go. But then like all the less likely teams were just storyboards at best. Until you get down to, I think it was the Kings, who we were praying that they would get the pick. Because one, it would go to the Sixers. But two, it was by far the funniest alt ending that we never got to use, which is just like Vlade just cursing himself.
Yeah.
Believe me, there were a lot of people, anyone rooting for the most absurd possible thing to happen in real life, that's the only way I know how to approach the lottery, is just root for mass chaos. And
yeah.
This stupid event should end as with like peak stupidity. Was rooting for that. I was wondering actually if the Kings ever reached out to you about your portrayal of Vlade in the second to last episode, and you know, the Marvin Bagley, Jaren Jackson joke. That's hurtful.
That's a double layer joke, because not only did they not take Luka, but he forgets who he took.
it's a 1-2 punch.
Yeah. I got nothing against Vlade. I like him. Oh, I was a Vlade fan growing up, you know, neutral, but it's just some guys are just too easy. But we have not heard anything from the Kings, but I have heard from the Kings fans who appreciate it.
Last thing, I mean, this is not even a question, but I can't imagine what this has been like for you. Like, your lives are probably totally different now because of this. I'm sure you never expected this to turn into anything, let alone a thing where, I mean, probably 1.5 to 2 million people have already watched this episode today. Do you ever have these moments where you're just like, whoa, oh my God, like life on many different levels, on many levels is like totally different for us because of this. You must, right?
It is weird to go from being fans and then to be like just fans who, you know, we're making a cartoon. Then we're like slowly absorbed into the NBA circle, and then to be a part of it, and you kind of happen so slowly, you don't really notice it. And there are occasionally those moments, like the one moment was when we're standing there talking to Sam Hinkie at the Sloan Analytics conference. Another one was when just today when Paul Pierce retweeted it was like, oh my God, that's Paul Pierce. I mean, to me, just the fact that we're talking to you right now, I'm a person who listens to your podcast. I'm not a person who's supposed to be on your podcast.
I remember when we were making Sports Friends, which we made before Game of Zones, like we were tweeting at you to see if you'd watch our app. Like we were like the people that were like an egg on Twitter that had like three followers.
Wow, really?
Yeah, we were like
checking not that kind of, not like troll egg. We just had
But like, yeah, it was like, I don't know, 7 years ago, 8 years ago. And like, now to be in this position talking to you about it and you quoting back, that's like completely surreal.
And I assume, yeah. I don't want to pry. You've already answered these questions, but I mean, you're going to have a lot of opportunities in front of you. And it's, I think it's a great story because anyone who puts themselves out there risks failure. I mean, it's easier to not risk failure than to actually risk public failure. And B, anything like this is just work. Like when people ask me about my career or about a friend's career or like how did Howard Beck make it this way? It's just work, man. There's no secret to it. It's just work. I mean, yes, you have to be funny. You have to have a sense of humor. But at the end of the day, it's just how much time for anything to make it at anything. It's just how much time are you willing to take away from all these other things that you enjoy doing to do this? And I just was in your edit room one day for 10 minutes and I saw everything that's in there and I see the episodes. It's just time, right? I mean, it's just time and it's just work and you love it, but it's still time. That's all it is.
I mean, wow. You really, really hit the bullseye there. It's like we get stuff all the time. People are like, oh my God, this must be so fun. I mean, it's fun the moment you have a spark of an idea, and it's fun when we put it out and we get to see people's reactions. But the whole process is grinding and stressful. And you mentioned that, you know, when you put yourselves out there like that, you don't want to fail. That anxiety we have about doing something bad that or won't be good is the tool we use to constantly chip away at these things and make them good. Is we're constantly scanning this thing and scanning these episodes, thinking where's a part someone could think is bad and let's fix it. And that means crazy late nights. That means weekends. That means tons of stress and pressure on the pipeline. And we know we have conflicts where a script's got to get in. I think the script sucks and our animation Chris Wallinger, our animation supervisor, producer, is like, we've got to get the script in. And, you know, the process itself is a lot of friction. I think it was, not to get all pretentious here, but like, there's some quote by Steve Jobs that like, talking about how like, it really, the process of making something great is like putting a rock in the tumbler and just tumbling until the stone is polished. But there's a lot of friction and bumps in that process. And so the product is fun and silly, but the process is very rigorous and we work very, very hard. So it's nice to hear that you notice that.
People often will say like, you got to make the episodes longer, or like, you got to make this like 30 minutes Netflix show or something. And they don't realize that like, we are fully maxed out when we are making these things. Like, we are putting everything into it. And it is nights and weekends. Like, there is nothing else left to give. That's why there's been this slow creep in the growth of the show, is because we are just trying to figure out every corner that we can shave off and every additional efficiency we can add to the process in order to give fans more, to make the ideas bigger, to make the episodes bigger. And this last season, you know, it was only 4 episodes, but we were able to make them 10 minutes long, which for us was just like a mind blowing length, even though it doesn't seem like it because we make these things so dense. It's not like, I think, like a lot of normal shows where you have like a lot of dead time. It's just like, we're just constantly jam packing it with stuff.
It takes a lot of energy and time to make and effort and stress to make something that people watch and go, that was actually better than I thought. Like, that was supposed to be a dumb cartoon, but it was actually really, really good. And you're absolutely right. Like, there, you know, Kobe talked about it. Like, it really is just, you just got to put in tons of work and there's no shortcuts. There's talent involved, but that's just a small part of it. It really is a lot of work.
When a talented person, and talent can be anything, talent doesn't mean, you know, talent is a broad term, but when a talented person meets the thing that they love, sometimes you don't know what the thing you love is until you sort of stumble on it. When talent and passion intersect, it's special, but talent plus passion only leads to work, because work is the next part, and work is the only thing. There is talent plus passion doesn't lead you anywhere if it doesn't lead to work. And it's just a lot of work and a lot of time. And I know how much you guys have agonized over it. And that's why I really wanted to have you on, is to congratulate you, because you made something special. You made something that, I mean, imagine making something that people are like looking forward to every week or every, I mean, that's a very special thing. So I sincerely want to congratulate you. I can't wait to see what you do next. And thank you for creating all these hours of content for us to laugh with and all that. So congrats.
Thank you so much. And thanks for having us on your podcast. And we're going to continue to listen to your podcast, even though we're no longer making episodes. So thanks for you also putting in the hard work.
Adam and Craig Malamud, creators of Game of Zones. You guys are awesome. Thank you so much. Stay safe and stay healthy. And I hope to see you physically at some sort of event. Maybe not harassing Sam Hinkie, but maybe just having a normal conversation sometime before like 2022. Thank you guys.
Yeah, thank you. Exactly.